Oh my God, I hope that's a plane. Oh Jesus, please be a plane. Oh please. Mark Weiser, how are you ready for this?
Cameraman said, what the hell is that midway across the Hudson River? It was a perfectly circular pit.
What a thing just hovering sort of 100 yards away. I could have hit it with a brick if I'd gone.
For the first time in our history, we're studying something that's studying us.
Nobody told me that this is like this.
Suddenly, something else flew into the frame. Fired a beam of light that struck the dummy warhead, doing a circle, if you can imagine, circling our warhead. Fired another beam of light at it, which struck the warhead.
The Virtually Strange Network presents Strange Days Indeed, your premier source for UFO information, with your host, Errol Bruce Knapp.
That's right, your premier sauce for UFO information. Comes right out of the bottle. No, not to say that. I don't know where that came from. It came right out of my bottle. So it's Saturday night in the big city. Out of Toronto tonight only, they have a big football game happening out west, Montreal. CJAD is covering that. So those of you who are savvy and are listening in Montreal, good evening and welcome to edition 405 of Strange Days Indeed, the program that observes and reports on the phenomena that surround one of the greatest mysteries that humanity has ever faced, UFOs. Unidentified flying objects. Tonight, Dave Ferlot with his take on it, British correspondent Stuart Miller, Chris Rutkowski, he from Winnipeg, Manitoba, who has, along with Jeff Dittman, just published a new book, The Canadian UFO Report, The Best Cases Revealed, based on Chris and Jeff's annual Canadian UFO surveys. And as usual, every second week, Alfred Lindberg will take us home. Well, fair amount of activity north of the border here in Canada lately. For instance, in Sackville, Nova Scotia, on July 12th at around midnight, witness was sitting outside on a chair smoking a cigarette, which is the way most people report UFOs. They're having a cigarette. Maybe there's a connection between the nicotine and that object in the sky. He was smoking a cigarette with his girlfriend when they heard what sounded like a biplane or a Cessna flying in a circle right above them for 4 minutes. And then the sound disappeared. And several minutes later, they heard a low rumble getting closer. He said he knew it was fighter jets at about 20 to 40,000 feet up flying on either side of something that he'd never seen before in his life. It had a large orange circular light in front, a very long oval-shaped orange light in the middle, and another circular light in the back. This object had no blinking lights at all, he said. They watched it until it went beyond sight behind some trees. July 6th, Sackville, Nova Scotia. Our thanks to Peter Davenport of the National UFO Reporting Center. And out of Winnipeg in Manitoba, Chris Rutkowski's hometown, Sunday, July 23rd at around 3 a.m. in the morning. Guy was looking out of the window of his apartment building overlooking Assiniboine Park, that's in a southerly direction from his building, when he observed an object slightly bigger than a star moving southwest and very fast. In his opinion, it was too low and large to be a satellite and definitely too fast to be a high-flying jet. In addition, the noise was audible and the object disappeared while he was following it with his binoculars, possibly due to rain or due to thin cloud cover. He's fairly certain it wasn't a satellite or a plane. Our thanks to Brian Vike of HBCC UFO for that report. And a couple out of British Columbia almost every night for the past week or so. The witness says he and his girlfriend have seen from her balcony many bright high-speed lights moving across the sky. Some stop, some make 90-degree turns, and some blink out in mid-sky. Sometimes multiple lights move at once across the sky, and several sightings involving airplanes following the lights or spotted near them, he says. On July 24th to 28th, the lights made 90-degree angles and more. The witness says that he tried to convince his girlfriend to contact Brian Vike herself so that Brian could have her first-hand account in greater detail. And over at North Surrey, just outside Vancouver, white lights in a triangular pattern. Witness says Monday morning this week he was going through one of his brief periods of insomnia, and that would be August 7th, brought on by all the hot weather they've been having. He was sitting at home playing on his computer and glanced out of the window every few moments. He just had a quick look around and saw nothing, but no sooner had he glanced back at his computer when a bright flash caught his attention out of the corner of his eye. He looked up and saw three large white lights in a triangular pattern with a white strobe in the center. He says for a second he thought it was a plane as it was flying with the base of the triangle as the leading edge. He quickly grabbed his binoculars and managed to observe it for several seconds. All he could make out, he said, was a vague dark shape between the lights, and even the strobe didn't appear to light up the area around it. There were no lights that he could see other than the white ones, no green or red running lights. It was at about 1,000 feet westbound toward Vancouver International. It appeared to be in a shallow dive of approximately 200 miles an hour. And judging by its rate of descent, he didn't think it would have reached the airport unless it flattened out after he lost sight of it behind his building. He doubts it was more than about a quarter of a mile away when he first saw it, and it was completely silent. The sky was completely clear that night, and traffic noise was pretty well non-existent. So he should have been able to hear it if it were a plane. As to where it came from, he had no idea. He just looked out and saw nothing, and yet almost two-thirds of it across his window in seconds. It was almost as if it had been materialized at that spot and continued from there. He just remembers the size. He says it appeared larger than most private planes, but smaller than a two-engine commercial jet. A lot of flying triangles, a lot of reports out of Canada. And we'll get into some of those a little later on in the program at the top of the second hour with Chris Rutkowski. Coming up, Dave Furlott.
These are strange days indeed on UFO News Radio. Here with his take on it is Dave Furlott.
It amazes me that people still question the existence of UFOs with the evidence that is gathered on a yearly basis. Chris Rutkowski of Ufology Research of Manitoba has spent more than a decade compiling sighting reports here in Canada, and every year he produces his survey results. Now, Chris is only one of a multitude of ufologists that compile sighting reports, and there is one thing that is evident year after year. UFOs are here, and they are not going to go away. All too often, we tend to get caught up with some of the earlier UFO reports, and we bog down so much that people all around us ask questions about whether there is anything new out there. Yeah, there is. But we tend to ignore it now because there are so many reports. In Canada alone, there were almost 900 reported sightings in 2004, and just under 800 sightings in 2005. Let me repeat that for you. In Canada only, there were almost 1,700 reported sightings of UFOs in the sky within a 24-month period. Start thinking about that for a few minutes. That means that on a worldwide basis, we're talking tens of thousands of sightings of UFOs being reported. And even if we say that 50% of those sightings are explained away as natural phenomena, it means that we're still left with enough sightings we could fill the pages of a book that would rival the Encyclopedia Britannica. And we're not talking backwoods hillbillies that are reporting strange lights in the sky. We're talking men and women from every walk of life reporting everything from strange lights through to clearly visible craft of some nature running with some kind of illumination visible on the outside. Now, even if we say that 90% of all the reported sightings are either normal everyday things, the ravings of some lunatics, outright lies, hoaxes, and even just people who had a little too much to drink, that still leaves us with hundreds of sightings on a yearly basis that exhibit enough hard evidence that UFOs have to be taken seriously. So, why are there still people out there that refuse to believe it? Well, it might have something to do with the fact that governments in both Canada and the USA refuse to accept the existence of UFOs. Matter of fact, there are agencies, both military and civilian, that actively refute UFO reports and do everything they can to hide, cover up, and deny the existence of UFOs. This, of course, means that if you are a good citizen of these countries, you will take the word of your government that UFOs do not exist. Go back to work, pay your taxes, have a nice life. Other people who could care less about what our government believes or does not believe have made up their minds that UFOs don't exist because they personally have never seen one. Unfortunately, this is the same type of person that if they were nose-to-nose with a great white shark, believes they wouldn't get eaten because they've been told that sharks don't like the taste of humans. Well, they kind of forgot that a shark doesn't know you're human until he takes a bite out of you. Other people who still refuse to believe in UFOs simply don't care. They don't believe it, they don't want to know about it, they don't care. Unless a UFO lands in their backyard, aliens come out, walk in, and abduct Fluffy the pet rabbit, they simply don't care. These people are convinced that UFOs and their occupants have done nothing bad to us in the more than 6 years that we've been talking about them. Anyone who claims to have been abducted are either crazy or trying to put one over on us. Animal mutilations are the work of some Satanist group, and any pilots that have not returned to base when being dispatched to chase UFOs simply crashed through pilot error. Truth be told, there will always be people out there that will not believe UFOs exist, and there will be nothing that will change their mind. This take isn't interested in them. The ones I'm interested in are the ones sitting on the fence. If you need proof, just look at the thousands of reports on a yearly basis, and some simple math will drive home the fact that UFOs exist, and they're not going away anytime soon. But that's just my take on it.
Dave Furlong, every week at this time. Strange days, indeed.
And the reports that we've had of late, Dave Furlong, seem to be becoming more and more frequent.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're hearing more and more and more about them. I mean, it's rather obvious. There's something out there, people.
There is. And it ain't just astronauts.
No.
Even those astronauts have seen things, but later denied it, but they've seen things and talked about it on television.
And on radio.
And on radio, and in books.
And in front of the UN.
Yes. Dave, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We shall talk to you again next week.
For sure.
Good take, as always. Night, Dave.
Night.
UFOReview.net is a website you need to bookmark and put up there in your toolbar, because Stuart Miller does a magnificent job daily of gathering together all of the strange news coming out on a daily basis. I mean, you want to know about archaeology, anthropology, you want to know about space, cryptozoology, astrobiology, crop circles, the paranormal, UFOs, it's all there at UFOReview.net. And the publisher of UFO Review, which comes out every couple of months, is Stuart Miller. He's also our British correspondent. And once a month, the second Saturday, Stuart stays up later than he normally does so he can join us on the phone from his home in Cheshire. Good morning, Stuart.
Good evening, Errol. Good evening. You know, you were saying before when you were going through some of the sightings reports that a lot of them were from people sitting outside
smoking
a cigarette.
Yes. And you used to do that. Well, you used to sit outside and smoke cigars, right?
Well, I did, but you mentioned the tobacco. But I wonder if it's always tobacco in those cigarettes.
Yeah, but still, unless you're smoking something particularly strong, the hallucinogenic qualities of cannabis sativa are not that bad.
I wouldn't know, Errol.
I'm only going by what people have told me. those people are not even my friends.
Indeed.
So
I know what you mean.
Yes.
That's right.
Interesting, because I swear a good 60-70% of the reports that I read here all are prefaced with, I was outside having a cigarette. I guess certain times of the year, that's the only reason to be outside, isn't it?
Well, yeah, people are chucked out of the house because they're not allowed to smoke in the house, maybe,
yeah.
And they step outside, and mm-hmm. they've got nothing else to do except perhaps look around and look up, and they see moving lights.
Indeed. That's what they see, and they report them, and we're grateful that they do. It gives us a good 10 minutes of interesting stuff for people to hear. An email this week, Stuart Miller from The Norm, who sends me a staggering amount of email every week. He says, Stuart Miller indicated in a post at UFO Updates earlier this week that he is suspicious that there is a conspiracy. He quotes you where you said, I have noticed this pattern before. A strong story with some credibility appears that seems to suggest a reasonable possibility that extraterrestrial life might exist. In this case, possibly the Buzz Aldrin story is then followed straight away by a smackdown, just to stop us from getting too uppity. Stuart Miller says in his email, as I say, I've noticed this pattern before, and I think it's a conspiracy. So the Norm suggests that perhaps you can elaborate on the idea of conspiracy now.
At this very moment.
At this very moment, if you would care to do that.
Well, what Norm, I think, or rather what you very kindly omitted, was that at the end of the email, I sort of put forward the notion that maybe I was nuts because I suspected that there was this conspiracy going. I think if you announce on a public forum that you think there's a conspiracy and that you're too lazy and idle to actually offer any evidence, then you've got to expect people are probably going to think you're a bit nuts. I would argue that maybe it's not a conspiracy. It says the authorities are very, very careful with what they say and that if and when any announcement is ever going to be made about the existence of life on Mars, however tiny and impossible virtually to see with the naked eye it may end up being, I think that it's going to be a very carefully managed event. I don't think that they're just going to blurt it out. I don't think it's just going to sort of leak out, so to speak. And I think that they're going to want to have all their sort of cards stacked in the right order before they say anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the purpose of my remarks in the first place was because I had noticed, although I'd never written it down, I'd never made a note of when it occurred, but I had noticed in the past that you get these stories where there'd be a story about, and in the case I quoted, the Buzz Aldrin story, in fact you mentioned it a moment ago, a very, very strong story, not suggesting that there's intelligent life out there, but there could be a possibility of. And then you get these stories, admittedly not UFO-related, not alien-connected as such, but to do with life on Mars, and those two stories that came out a week or so back, virtually simultaneously saying, well, we don't think there's much chance of extraterrestrial life on Mars. I've noticed that pattern. Now, it could just be entirely in my imagination. For example, there are always stories out there suggesting that there is intelligent life about, and I just grab one out of the air and sort of put two and two together and get five. Or it could be that possibly I'm right. Am I a nutcase for thinking that? Am I too inclined to be conspiratorial in my outlook? Am I paranoid in my outlook in possibly thinking that? Well, I think a lot of people would argue I am. I don't know, what do you think?
It strikes me as very odd. I sort of ranted about this last week, but there was this documentary that he did, I guess about 18 months ago, played in the United States. I don't recall seeing it here in Canada. Apollo 11, The Untold Story. We discussed it very briefly on the UFO updates list, and then it went away. And then it played in the UK, and I think it was a Scottish newspaper that picked up on the fact that Aldrin and Carpenter and Neil Armstrong had seen something on the way to the moon in Apollo 11. And not wanting to ask, could they see a UFO very close to them? They asked where the Saturn IV B rocket booster was in relation to them. And NASA came back, didn't pick up on it at all, and said, well, it's about 6,000 miles away. So there you have Buzz Aldrin sitting in front of a television camera saying they saw a UFO right next to the capsule on the way to the moon on Apollo 11. And then also talking about these Z particles, as he called them, that were little lights that were floating through the cabin as they were on their way to the moon. And when Aldrin was on a well-known radio program last week, he completely denied that they had seen anything. And his focus was, well, we did, you know, we did see these Z particles. And the host of the program let him get away with it. He didn't follow up and say, well, why did you say this on television? So 18 months ago, he would say, yeah, we had something flying alongside us. And then 18 months later, when there was a chance to confirm what he'd said, he denied it.
Well, are you suggesting there's a conspiracy? And in between, during the course of those 18 months, somebody got hold of him and said, well, you know.
Shut up.
It.
Yeah.
Well,
stop
but,
talking
you know,
about
it's
it.
It's on the record, though.
Well, yes,
I've seen it myself.
Well, so have I. The whole documentary is there. Last week's program listing in the news and info section, there's a link to the whole documentary. I don't know, Stuart, the indications are that somebody knows a hell of a lot and is not saying a damn thing. That's what it boils down to.
Yes, but I wonder if they do know a hell of a lot. I wonder if they just don't know anything, or not much more than we know.
I don't know, Stuart. Somebody does. All of this information, all of the stuff that's been gathered, perhaps even wreckage, debris, perhaps even bodies, have been gathered up and taken somewhere. Have they ended up in the same place as in the Indiana Jones movie where the Ark of the Covenant ended up in some warehouse somewhere, you know? Interesting discussion started by Greg Boone on the UFO updates list. Much advertising going on using the UFO theme over in the UK?
Yeah, certainly in the past, yes. Beer adverts come to mind. They're probably as much as what goes on in North America. I don't think there's anything floating around at the moment.
I don't know if you went to that website.
Yeah.
Greg Boone and Alfred Lemberg have been discussing. I thought it was kind of interesting, actually. It tends to cutify everything alien or make us look more loopy than some of us are.
Well, what part of the overall cultural conspiracy involving aliens do you think that that has? I mean, is there a greater... let's get conspiratorial, Earl. Is there a greater message or a motivation behind it than just to bring a smile to our face?
Well,
why use aliens?
If you recall, Steven Spielberg and George Lucas were supposed to be softening us up for some big pronouncement about UFOs and aliens more than a decade ago now.
We're still waiting.
Yes. I'm softened up sufficiently. I think I can take it. I'd like to think I can. I want to know the answer, but I may not like it.
I'll tell you what is being used more and more for commercial advertising, crop circles.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite open now, you know, that people will design crop circles for advertising agencies, and they will advertise products that way as well.
Yeah.
In fact, it's got very weird with crop circles over in the UK this year. There was a gentleman called Paul Obey who lived in the southwest of England, which is where the majority of crop circles are seen, who committed suicide. And at the inquest, it was claimed by some of his friends that the number of crop circles this year would drop because Mr. Obey was a circle hoaxer, and a lot of his friends, including Matthew Williams, weren't going to bother this year, partly out of respect and so on and so forth. Coupled with the increased commercial use of crop circles, I think it's taken a lot of the mystique away from the subject. Having said that, though, the numbers do seem to be bearing up, and crop circles are appearing in stranger places in the UK. They seem to have broken out of the southwest. They've even gone up to Scotland, into Norfolk as well, and they're not normally seen around there. The crop circle world at the moment in the UK, I think, is going through some sort of change. I think there are fewer and fewer people that believe there's any really sort of extraterrestrial substance to it. It is now being recognized more and more, dare I say it, as an art form.
They're spectacular, some of them. Can't call them circles anymore. They're sort of aggroglyphs. Quite phenomenally complex. Sorry, we've got about a minute and a half. Is there something that you wanted to go to?
I want to be rude. Nick Pope announced that Tim Good has a new book.
Yes.
I don't care. Well, Tim Good is really remote and distant from the U.S. You know, he only reappears when he's got something to sell, namely a book. And other than that, he doesn't want to touch us with a barge pole, quite frankly. So he's got a new book out. I don't care.
I met him when he was in Toronto. He seemed to be a very nice, very affable man. We had a great discussion in the military club down on University Avenue. We just keep on running out of time, and it's always way past your bedtime when we start to talk. Stuart, thank you, sir. It's always good having you on.
It's a pleasure, Earl.
You have a great mind and a great point of view, and I really look forward to having you on, and it's a pity we can't do it more often, but you cannot continue to lose sleep the way you're likely to if we have you on more often.
Is that kind of you to sell that, Harold?
Thank you, Stuart. UFOReview.net. Go take a look. There's all kinds of wonderful stuff there, and Stuart puts out a regular online zine which you need to read. We shall talk to you in a month, Stuart. Good night.
All right. Good night.
Some breaking news of our own tonight. John Velez, who has not been with us in quite a while as a regular contributor, returns to the air with us next Saturday night. And look forward to hearing from John Velez once again, the abductee activist. And the website for the book, Canadian UFO Report, The Best Cases Revealed, says, the Canadian UFO Report is a popular history of the UFO phenomenon in Canada, something that has captured the imaginations of young and old alike. Drawn from government documents and civilian case files, many previously unpublished, the book includes a chronological overview of the best Canadian UFO cases, from the very first sighting of fiery serpents over Montreal in 1662 to reports from the past year. There are chapters on the government's involvements with UFOs, UFO landing pads, media interest, and even UFO abductions. What were the ghost airplanes seen over the Parliament buildings in 1915, or the flying saucers seen by military officers over Goose Bay Air Force Base, Newfoundland, in the 1940s and 50s? Chris Rutkowski, along with Jeff Dittman, is the author of the Canadian UFO Report, The Best Cases Revealed. He's a science educator with a background in astronomy, and since the mid-1970s, he's been investigating reports of UFOs and other strange phenomena and writing about his experiences and findings. And joining us on the line from his home in Winnipeg, Manitoba, is Chris Rutkowski. Good evening, Chris.
Good evening, Earl.
Congratulations on the book finally coming out. This is good.
Yes, thank you very much. Yes, we're glad that it's popped onto the market and that it's in stores, and hopefully it'll get a good reception.
From the reception by the media, I gather it is getting a good reception.
Yeah, it's been reviewed favorably in four or five cities across Canada so far.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good.
It's not bad at all for a Canadian UFO book.
That's right. We have them too, you know.
So what prompted this? Was it all the years of doing the UFO survey and going, we really need to do something more with this?
Yeah, Jeff and I have been collaborating on the survey since the late 80s, as you noted. And we wanted to present some of the information in a form that would be accessible to a lot of people who like picking up books about the subject. At the same time, sort of collect all what we thought were some of the more interesting, the best, the strangest, the most remarkable, the best documented cases, and set them out in a manner that was entertaining and educational, and in a way that would be really accessible for everybody. So we put our heads together and came up with an interesting kind of collaboration, because Jeff and I have two different writing styles. So what's happened is that we each wrote separate chapters throughout the book. I think we collaborated on maybe one or two. The book ended up being a series of personal essays about some of the best cases in the UFO scene in Canada over the years. So it's an interesting, unique work in that sense as well.
What's interesting, reading the blurb on the book at the publishers, is that there are two cases there that I wasn't aware of, the fiery serpents over Montreal in 1662. And the other one being the ghost airplanes over the Parliament buildings in 1915.
These are things that go back quite a ways, but we think that these fiery serpents over what would become Montreal were probably the very earliest reports of what would become UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking into the 1600s, but some of the missionaries working with First Nations people back then, you know, the Jesuits were doing an incredible job of documenting what they were experiencing and seeing, and in relationships with many of the the individuals there, and they recorded very diligently things like the earthquakes and floods, and then incidentally these fiery serpents and objects zooming about the sky as well.
Really? Literally zooming about the sky?
Absolutely. And then the ghost airplanes. 1915, this was taken very, very seriously. Parliament Hill itself was blacked out, thinking that we were being invaded by forces unknown.
And especially in the First World War, too.
Oh, absolutely. So this was something that was rather significant. Many people had heard the engines zooming overhead and seeing lights, and of course, such really physical objects didn't quite exist at the time for night flying, and so it's a puzzle as to what some of them were, although certainly at least a few of them were attributable to some balloons and fireworks and things like that. But nevertheless, there were some interesting cases. It's difficult to say what was really happening, but something that would cause a lot of concern at the level of the Prime Minister's office definitely deserves some note.
And I guess that was fairly well covered by the media of the time, too.
Oh, yeah. In fact, a lot of the local newspapers from London all the way through Ottawa and little blurbs across the country all noted that something very, very unusual was going on. And again, this was not too long after the great airships that were going on in the late 1800s. So there was still this penchant for media to report these types of things and to get people reading the broadsheets.
Were those ghost airplanes reported over the Parliament buildings in 1915, were they seen elsewhere in Canada around that time?
Well, there were objects seen throughout Canada and into the United States, especially in New England around that time.
Hmm.
But there was this sort of panic around Ottawa, thinking that we were being very vulnerable in our own security. And, of course, homeland security back then was very different than what it is today, but very much a concern, obviously, enough to cause this type of panic.
It's fascinating, because I know that with your new book, The Canadian UFO Report, and then Jerome Clark has been doing a lot of rummaging and digging over the past centuries and finding stories like this, too.
Right, and certainly Jan Aldrich as well, because some of this information comes from a lot of the documented airship notes and the Fortean researchers have been working very hard, and we do reference them where we can. And some of these come from microfilm copies that we ourselves have dug out. So it's amazing what you can find when you dig through some of the archives. In fact, on a tip from Stan Friedman, he had suggested to me to look in the archives for some Canadian papers and see what was going on the fateful night in 1947 when supposedly something crashed in Roswell. And around the same time in July 1947, there were some interesting things happening in Canada. Interestingly enough, Canada was going through a series of interesting storms very similar to what we're going through now. And in fact, there were floods galore in parts of Canada. But because of all the flurry of interest about flying saucers, had a lot of publicity from Kenneth Arnold, there were actually saucer-watching parties throughout Canada, as there was throughout North America. And in fact, on the roof of some radio stations and newspapers, and particularly some here in Winnipeg that I had located, there were saucer-watching parties. It was very interesting that this is the type of thing that was going on throughout Canada, in Toronto, in Ottawa, and also in Vancouver, where people were, you know, caught up in the possibility and the excitement, reading the newspaper accounts of objects seen throughout North America and speculating on what was going on.
Was anything actually seen during the course of those saucer watches across the country in 47?
The ones that I had tracked down, no, but and yet the sightings were reported from other people. So the, unfortunately, very much like some of the saucer watching parties that we're familiar with these days, nothing shows up when you're looking for them, but they always show up later.
Out of the corner of your eye, you will get a glimpse of something.
Yeah, I was even trying to watch the Percy meteor shower last night, but it clouded over for me.
Well, it's nice and clear here in Toronto now. It's going to get a little chillier later on, but we should still, on the outskirts of Toronto anyway, be able to see some of those meteorites coming in.
I would encourage your listeners to go and take a look tonight.
Pretty spectacular stuff, actually, especially if you live outside the city. Although it's a pretty crisp and clear night out there. I was out there at the top of the hour and looking at the stars, and even at Midtown, at Yonge and St. Clair here in Toronto, can see a lot of stars tonight.
Yeah, in fact, you probably would be able to see, even from downtown Toronto with terrible light pollution, some of the brighter ones. In fact, we get UFO reports of bright fireballs, particularly around meteor shower peaks. of brilliant green teardrop-shaped things flying through the sky ponderously 5 to 10 seconds in duration. And this would be the time to see some of those. It shows you that people are spending some time looking up, but many are not aware of the magnificence of the cosmos to produce such things that are perfectly natural and not completely mysterious.
I've even seen one in daylight when I lived uptown at Young and Eglinton here in Toronto. My brother and John Karras and I were standing on my balcony looking south, and we were just standing there talking, and suddenly this green teardrop-shaped object flew quite sedately and with a slight about maybe a quarter of a mile away from us. And we all heard it, we all saw it at the same time, and all our heads followed it. It disappeared behind, how low it was, behind an apartment building across Yonge Street, a couple of streets over. And all of our heads followed at the same speed where it should have come out, and it didn't. But what was really interesting was that a little jet fighter came screaming across the lake and across the city moments after this thing disappeared. Now, that was odd. I mean, seeing the fire ball is one thing, but when you see a fighter jet come across the lake and across the city, presumably to take a look at what this thing was.
There's wonderful stories like that that we uncovered when we were going through investigators' files and government documents and newspaper accounts and published accounts, and just putting them into one book was quite a challenge. You know, which ones do you pick?
That's always the thing, isn't it? And what were the criteria you finally settled on for these stories and reports?
The stories that made it had to be part of either a significant wave that was across Canada, or unique in their own way, being very well documented, reputable observers, or themselves intriguing, and things that we just found had not received as much attention from previous book accounts, and we wanted to go into a little more detail and try and get to the bottom of some of these.
Did you include the big one in Montreal a few years ago where there was this rectangular object that was the size of a football field? Was it over the Bonaventure Hotel?
Over the Bonaventure. As a matter of fact, a stylized version of that appears on the cover of our book. So.
Oh, that's what that is.
Yeah, I was trying to figure that out, but that's what I'm told what it is.
Do you have any recent numbers on the survey?
No, we're just in the process of starting to add that up. We know that we're somewhere similar to last year.
800 or 900 something.
We know that we're second highest since we've been compiling last year, so we'll see what we're going to be at the end of this year. But sometime in the midsummer, we tend to do a quick count. But we're somewhere around the levels of last year. It's difficult to say, but we're doing pretty good.
The Canadian UFO Report is the book, The Best Cases Revealed, written by Chris Rakowski and Jeff Dittman, and published by Dundurn Publishing here in Toronto. Chris Rakowski, always a pleasure to talk to you. I hope lots of people buy your book, because there's a lot of interesting Canadian UFO cases.
And we'd like to hear more.
And you can always get hold of Chris Rakowski via tonight's program listing. Chris, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Earl.
My regards to Jeff Dittman.
Okay.
Okay. Good night. Every second Saturday, we head down to Alabama, wherein dwell the loquacious Alfred Lemberg.
Yes, yes, the incense is lit. My fetish is the mast. Runes cast an I Ching throne. I am prepared.
His loins are girded, and his vocal cords are firmly connected to his left brain. Evening, Alfred.
Well, you know, I did that, I think, basically just because I wanted to demonstrate that I do have some small sense of humor that, you know, like I can let shine.
Yes.
However,
you are gruntled tonight?
I am somewhat gruntled.
Yes.
Yes, and I do appreciate the segue into the subject of milk and cows and UFOs that was recently brought up on the
updates list. You took umbrage at the fact that the American Dairy Council are using aliens to promulgate the sale of milk.
Well, that's pretty much it in a
glass. Yes. Yes.
In a
milk bottle, yes.
Yes, yes, with the milk mustache, which is actually cow pus, from what I understand. But no, it's true. But the only thing that I was really concerned about is check this. We're exhorted to go over and have a look and, you know, and have a giggle, and I can appreciate it, and I can have a laugh with anybody else. But basically, when you drop back and look at it, it's a ridiculing of the abductees and the abductee phenomenon. It's discrediting cattle mutations, you know, something which has been going on for decades. It's deriding UFOs collectively and in the aggregate. And they do all this, you see, without a shred of any evidence at all. No learned discourse whatsoever, just to sell milk and also additionally manage to keep UFOs at arm's length. That plausible deny, you know, if UFOs don't exist, if there's not some kind of scenario like that going on, then stop talking about it, guys. I'm preaching to the choir, I know.
There's a certain cola that did very nicely with a whole bunch of UFO-related advertising.
A certain cola?
Yeah. Several Pepsi commercials where there was a beautiful blonde girl came out of a flying saucer.
I don't recall that one at all.
Okay.
And we have bigger fish to fry.
Okay,
you know?
let's
give
go.
Give me UFOs before a beautiful woman, much to the horror and chagrin of Paul Kimball, but that's neither here nor there.
You got it in. Yes. Ding.
Well, it's there to have. With regard to Mr. Rutkowski.
Yes.
Wonderful man, brilliant individual, and doing a profound service, adding to that weight of the inexorable evidence. But, you know, the very first thing that I did coming into updates, and you might remember this, was get in a fight with him. Do you recall that?
I remember that, yes.
Yeah.
But then you've had a fight with one or two people on the list over
I think
years.
I've fought with just about everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're still here to talk about it.
Well, I think you guys appreciate that I'm trying to be consistent, and I'm just trying to be true to an ethic.
And you've stuck by it admirably, I must say.
He was also able to talk a little bit about unsung heroes, and you know, Jan Aldridge should get a little bit of mention there, I think, for being one of the soldiers in the ufological Cold War.
Yes, and he set up Project 1947, which was looking at pre-1947 UFO cases. And he traveled extensively doing that research, funded by the Center for UFO Studies and the Fund for UFO Research, had several grants and did a really good job, and came up to Canada and met with him. He visited here in Toronto with Tom and Lise Theophanes and Sue Covius and myself and other people, and ended up with Michel Deschamps' astounding newspaper collection from the Northern Ontario newspapers of UFO and flying saucer reports from over the last 800 years.
And that's the whole point, isn't it? The old ink and stone.
Yes.
And as you know, I've written epic poetry about just that.
And it's much better than Vogon poetry.
Seriously.
Yes,
you know, with regard to Mr. Rutkowski's book, perhaps he could make a review copy available to me, and I could do another one of my unsettlingly passionate reviews.
Yeah, well, I know that Chris doesn't have high speed at home, but undoubtedly he will go and grab himself a copy of tonight's program. And interestingly enough, Gavin McLeod out there in British Columbia, out on the left coast, UFOBC, emailed, and unfortunately didn't arrive in quickly enough for the Chris segment, but he says, a question for Chris, if I send money for book and shipping, will you send me a signed copy? Thanks. There's two for Chris to listen to, and all the more reason to go grab either the podcast from iTunes or directly from the Virtually Strange Network, Strange Days Indeed. Tonight's program listing will have a play button there, probably by Tuesday, thanks to Bubba down there.
What a dude. What a man. What a stud.
What an amazing human being he is. All the busyness going on in his life, and he still finds time to grab this program off the web and scope it down to what it really is. A damn fine radio program.
Hallelujah. Yeah, you can amen over here. Amen,
yeah.
Amen.
But there was an interesting that you sent me a link to somebody's blog.
Yeah, that's right. It was a mention over on Leslie's Debris Field's blog.
Right.
She'd been over to listen to the program and gave it, I think, you know, they were essentially positive reviews.
Well, it seemed to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I parsed every word for insult.
Are you suggesting that nowadays you have to do that?
just since I started writing for UFO Magazine, I now have three specific blog mentions from different people about what a hairball I am. You know?
It's amazing, you know. You start to get a little notoriety, a little out of the milieu that you've been in for the last, what, 8, 9 years? Because you were an original with UFO updates.
Well, actually, it really goes back certainly over a decade now, almost to like 15 years, because, let's see, it was 1994 when Robert Hastings rekindled my interest in UFOs because of a chance lecture I attended at the college where he was lecturing about UFOs, and I just happened to be there and catch it, and he was electrifying, and no disrespect to people who sell their books, but what impressed me about this guy is he was selling absolutely nothing at all. He had nothing to sell, you know, and I thought, oh, wait a minute, come on, you know.
I thought the program that he was on made a fitting reprise for the weekend that I was off at the cottage. That is archived and available for those of you who missed it. It's definitely worth going and listening to. And the Robert Hastings, I'm just looking for the program.
While you're looking for that, I can say that I'm going to be talking to Mr. Hastings on the telephone tomorrow.
Are you?
About his new book. Now he's selling something. Took him, what, almost 15 years?
UFOs and Nukes, is that the one?
Yeah, he really gets into that and really, you know, kind of tears it apart and connects the dots. He struck me as a researcher from the very beginning. He is another one of those ufologists who have spent many years now failing only to disgrace themselves.
Yes.
You know, being able to make their points and answer the skeptobunkies, guys like Jerry Cohen, guys like, guys like yourself, Errol, to put a long and short on it.
Yeah, okay. People say, well, you're a ufologist, you can speak with... No, I can't. You can't speak with authority, and I'm not a ufologist. I happen to be a guy who is in the right place at the right time with the UFO updates email list. I worked a little in radio, and then ended up, fortunately, 8 years ago, coming up for 9, jumping into a slot that was available here at CFRB, and it's grown from there. Yeah, I'm opinionated. I don't express it often on the email list, if ever.
Ever, yeah.
I try and stay neutral there and be a reasonably moderate moderator. I'm a little more vocal on the radio here because I do have an opinion or two.
Yes, indeed. Furry,
yes.
Good killer in the street, down and dirty gang fight of a take this evening.
Dave Furlot.
His premise that UFOs are not going away.
You can't argue with that one.
Well, you know, I mean, his emphatic, in-your-face just declaration of it was just refreshing to hear. I liked it. You know, I liked the fact that he was talking about 1,700 reports in 2 years.
In Canada.
And then he started whittling them down. You know, let's take half that. Let's take half of that. Let's take another half of that. You still have hundreds.
And if you go by Stan Friedman, who said it was, what, 27% of Blue Book cases were unsolved?
Yep.
So you're looking at about 140 cases, inexplicable sightings in the last 2 years. Over Canada.
Now, a lot more evidence amassed, I think, than SETI can, you know, hold a candle to. And it just strikes me as completely bizarre. Why are they getting all the money when they don't have any results for what they've been trying to do? Lo, these many. God, I think it's decades now, isn't it? That's just another operation of them trying to hold UFOs and back at arm's length and keep them in some kind of realm of plausible deniability.
Well, a lot of that is a concern that some of their funding will go to UFO research.
Yeah, like Richard Hall or something. Mr. Miller and his conspiracy discussion, and I don't find his smackdown thesis at all unreasonable. It's pretty much what waddles and quacks. Must be that proverbial duck. Stuart Miller, a nutcase. I'm sorry. No, I just can't buy it. I won't buy it.
That's it?
Well, the point is talking about the government that would have to be somehow involved with justifying the mistrust that we feel for much of it. You know, at the end, Miller said, somebody knows. And I think that's the whole secret right there. You know, put it together with Furry was talking about 1,700 cases. Oh, and he mentioned something about sharks. The point there is that sharks don't bite Glasskirtians, see?
There's an expression that'll take at least 10 minutes to explain, and we have about a minute left.
Okay, there. There's Philip Glass. There's Dr. Paul Kurtz, you know, the head of PsyCop and the head UFO debunker. And you put their names together, Glass Kurtz.
Yes, and Skeptical Inquirer or Skeptic Magazine or PsyCop really have put a whole bunch of new stuff up at their website. None of it very complimentary about any of the things that interest us.
Yes, I was a mere candle in the broken wind there of PsyCop. Because I did throw up my which I thought was a lot more telling than theirs, because I take their 6 points, their covenant with the public, and I completely destroy it as it needs to be destroyed, because it's all a lie.
It really is fundraising under false pretenses. Thank you, Alfred Lemberg.
It was a joy and a pleasure, as always, Errol.
As always, the Alabama fog whistle. Alfred Lemberg will join us again in a couple of weeks. And that just about wraps it up for tonight. Thank you, Alfred. Thank you, Dave Frelott, Alfreda Zane. Thank you to Chris Rakowski and, of course, Stuart Miller and Dean Gualandi. Just having a busman's vacation here tonight. We'll see you next week.
That's this week's edition of Strange Days Indeed, hosted and produced by Errol Bruce Knapp. The executive producer is Gene Mascardelli.